You are listening to the podcast of Ice and Fire, episode 223 for the week of October 29th, 2017. Welcome back, listeners, to another episode of the podcast of Ice and Fire. We're still the longest-running podcast dedicated to George R. R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire series, contrary to recent popular belief, still podcasting about the books, and on occasion, against my wishes, also about HBO's Game of Thrones TV series. And this week, we are reuniting, all four of us. I make a big deal out of that. I think I'm just the one who's missing all the episodes. But we have reunited for a reread or a discussion, I guess, of the new Sons of the Dragon novella that was published on October 10th as part of the Book of Swords anthology, continuing on in George's history of the Targaryen family. And as always, this is Mimi.
This is Ashley.
This is Amin.
And this is Kyle.
You guys, my voice is awful. I'm really sorry to subject y'all to this.
Yeah, we've got, because, like, sexy Mimi with us today, so...
This is not an attractive sound. This is a masculine Mimi happening right now.
I was saying before we started recording, I don't think any of our listeners are going to believe this is actually you. They're going to think we got, like, an actress to come in and try her best Mimi voice.
Trying and failing. You know, I opened my Evernote to make notes on this novella so that I would have something useful to discuss in this episode. And I was like, the last time I did an episode, I guess, was March.
Jeez.
So really? 2 years.
Wow. I feel pretty bad. I'm doing good all right then. I don't mess with that anymore.
Y'all are still watching that fanfic, I guess, but...
Yeah.
Oh, only one of us has a baby, right? That we know of, so.
That we know of.
Kyle's got a bunch of bastards.
I know, I've got children running all around LA. It's just.
Yeah, I do have that kid, but.
That kid.
That kid. I have a baby.
Is he more like Anus, or is he more like Magor?
You know, the whole time I've been reading this, I was just like, I have a lot of opinions about this novella, but like not about like Targaryen history. I have a lot of mothering opinions. I now relate to this stuff as a mom. Yeah, you know, he's like an Anus type. No, I think that he is more of a Magor type.
Whoa. Is he holding a sword? He's wielding a butter knife like no one else?
He is. He will grab anything remotely dangerous that he sees. And I once saw him trying to pet Momo with a lid of a Tupperware bin, but it didn't look like he was petting her. It looked like he was mushing her with it, which is fine because Momo is a big dog. But I thought like, I got to be watching this kid for cruelty towards animals because as Song of Ice and Fire has taught me, that's the first sign that there's something wrong with it.
Oh, yeah. You've got a young Joffrey on your hands there.
Oh, boy. No, I think he likes dogs. He just doesn't know how to pet them yet. But I got my eye on him in case he do turn out to be a Magor type. What else is up? What's in news?
What is in news?
Good question. We had Roy DeTrice passed away for the narrator of the audiobooks.
Rest in peace, little dude.
I, like many others that listen to this podcast, got our first sampling of the book through the audiobooks. And for me, as much as you guys make fun of it for being dwarfs and pirates or pirates and leprechauns or whatever, he is the voice of the books.
Okay.
For me.
It's the voice in my head for a lot.
Yeah. So I was really bummed when I heard that news. And he's had a wonderful career. I mean,
he's had a prolific career.
Yeah, and all the movies he's done and everything, it's pretty amazing. So,
radio, theater, TV.
And he's a Guinness Book of World Records holder for the audiobooks, right? Like the most voice different characters or something like that.
Does it count as different characters if they kind of something?
Yes, it does, Ashley. Yeah, rest in peace, Roy.
But John Lee could have had that Guinness World Book of Records if he'd been given more than book four.
John Lee.
I love John Lee. But rest in peace, Roy DeTrice. I mean, yeah.
Will John Lee have the remainder of the audiobooks? Do we have any news on that?
John Lee.
I don't know. I think the fandom's already out on him.
Why? I don't understand.
I think he's not like that one.
We'll step in and fill the role. I'll fall over.
Can we do like a radio play with the four of us just doing the whole book?
You know, y'all laugh, but I am really good at doing character voices now, and I know Kyle's an actor, so I know he's good at doing the voices.
Whoa, you've got a dragon in the background there, Mimi.
Sorry. Dogs. Speaking... They might as well. At this point, they've contributed more to the podcast than I have. So.
Speaking of acting and doing voices, guys, I did my first audiobook for a sci-fi short story just recently.
What? Did you really? That's awesome.
I did. It was, it's been let out. I don't know the correct term. It's been published, I guess, on Starship Sofa. Which is a Hugo Award-winning podcast, I believe the only one, if I'm not mistaken, where they have writers write short stories and they find people to narrate them. And I was asked to read, to do one of the stories, and it is out. So, yeah, you can check that out. I'm trying to find out what episode it was on now, but I'll have that in just a minute. But yeah, but so I can do it. I can narrate a little bit. It's it is episode number 506, and the story is in a green dress surrounded by exploding clowns.
Awesome.
It's kind of a dystopian social media run future where you don't really get to make any life choices. Everything's determined by popular vote.
That's cool. So consider us, George. I mean, not this voice, but, you know, my normal one.
Cool. So are there any other Song of Ice and Fire news that we have? There's no update on the book.
George was saying at some point that either the book or another anthology would be done within a year, but it's probably the anthology.
Well, I read an article somewhere that said he's not doing any more anthologies until the books get done.
Hmm.
Really? He said that?
Yeah, that was the headline. So the article was probably vastly different than the headline.
But there are people who have criticized this work because he hasn't done Winds of Winter. But if he wasn't doing this, he'd just do something else. If you're stuck on something, you'll just make paper airplanes. Like if you don't want to do something, you'll just do something else.
He'd be writing another Wild Cards book. Yeah. Let him write these novellas.
And these are easier because he can just write it out. Like there's not even, it's just like one maester writing out. We don't even have the name of the maester. If he gets something wrong, he'll just say it was just history. He got it wrong. He doesn't have to make a complex story that makes sense in the sixth book, right?
Which is kind of cool that he lays down this history because I think like, it's nice. I mean, it's, you know, you commit to it, but you're right. You could always just be like, no, as a literary flair, you know, a maester putting his own spin on things if there's any details or timelines that don't match up. But also, you're being able to write Song of Ice and Fire without having to solve for, you know, characters and like plot lines and loose ends, you know, and especially now.
Wanted to write Targaryen history for the rest of the time and not touch the rest of the books, I'd be okay with that.
I would not.
that wouldn't be the reason why he didn't do the book. I'm just saying if he didn't do this and he'd be stuck on the book. Like there's only so much he can do. This isn't preventing the book from coming out. He would just watch football instead. Like,
so you interpret his novellas as him just hitting writer's block with the book?
I think so, and I'd rather have this than him doing nothing.
Yeah, I mean, his original version of this, I mean, was old, right? Because he did a reading in 2013 on this novella, so maybe
a lot of it is in World of Ice and Fire. Yeah, like this expands on it.
So let's talk about it, guys.
Story. I was hoping that we could all give our Lemon Cake score out of 5 in a quick. What your initial views of it were.
I mean, well, you can kick us off, sir.
Sure, I can, because I was thinking about it. I'll give it 3.75 out of 5. I enjoyed it, not as much as the earlier works that we reviewed in the same kind of framework. And I think my main problem was George did something that sometimes we're accused of doing, is too many in-jokes and references to other works. There's too much here, I think, that it breaks your immersion with things like Davos and... Jane Westerling. It's just like, no, this is just making too many references to his main work. Not foreshadowing, just inside jokes, basically.
Do you think that those are inside jokes, or it's just that people in this world only have like three names that they use.
Yeah, names, but then they also have like the same situation. It's more than foreshadowing. You can go and foreshadow something that's later. Yeah, okay, but it's just pure up straight up inside joke references over and over and over again, and it just was glaring in this one to me anyway.
I don't know. I kind of get the feeling that they kept reusing names over and over again. I didn't seem to bug me that much.
I'm gonna give it a three lemon cakes based on the same hang up that Amin had with it. I didn't enjoy it. I don't think it was as good as his previous novellas. However, I'm gonna give it four lemon cakes just for how readable it was, because I felt like The Princess and the Queen was very, there was a lot of complexity and court intrigue, and like there was a lot more to it in terms of the substance. And it was a longer read, but I also felt like sometimes it did require a lot of, it required some detail and patience to kind of read through it and really have a firm grasp on what was happening at any given time. I'm not saying that any of George R. R. Martin's books are intellectually like difficult to understand, but I enjoyed that, Sons of the Dragon was a pretty straightforward history, And it was easy. Like I liked that it took place after Aegon's landing, because for the first time I was able to kind of get my bearings and the feelings like of the first, seeds of that Targaryen lineage and kind of understand the people in a straightforward way. By the time that we hit, the Princess and the Queen era with the Dance of Dragons, I was like, there are a lot of people in the mix. I don't know how they're all related to each other. They all sound like assholes, but at least, with Sons of the Dragon, it was a little bit more straightforward on that family tree.
Yeah. I got to agree with you on that, Mimi. I felt like it was nice to be like, okay, we know Aegon came, he conquered. And then it was nice to kind of see the beginning of the Targaryens in Westeros. Whereas when we go to like the Green and the Black and that, those stories or whatnot, it just sort of drops us in the middle. And I had the same thing where I was just kind of like, where am I in the timeline? And who's who? It was nice to kind of be like, all right, here's the beginning. And we can, let's do this. And I kind of wish I had read this one first and carried on to the other ones, or there was one of these for each. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. It's not fair to compare it to his actual full-on novellas, The Mystery Knight and such, because it's in line with the stories in the World of Ice and Fire book. It's a history, maester-written account, and not supposed to be like the full arc of those short stories. So I can't compare it to those. But yeah, I did find it more comprehensible, and it was just a ton of fun. I had a good time reading it. I'm a slow reader, and I plowed through those 40 pages like nobody's business. And I really enjoyed it. So 4 out of 5 for me.
Oh, you guys are like super in depth. I'm giving it a 4 out of 5 because I love Targs. it's not as good as The Princess and the Queen and the Rogue, whatever. What was it called? Rogue Prince?
Yeah.
I didn't quite like it as much as those ones. I think I'm just more of a intrigue person, but I, super loved it anyways. 4.5. I don't know. I'm moving up. And yeah, it was really easy to read. I read it almost completely on a flight here, so... like that's unheard of for me. I'm a very slow reader.
Same
I'm
here.
I'm kind of mad because I was always looking for like a family tree, and I feel like I don't really ever see a good one that's got starting from Aegon the Conqueror.
Yeah, there's just so many little offshoots and branches and bastards and stuff that it's hard to actually make a good Targ family tree. And same names, yes. Absolutely. I'm looking at a nice one
especially,
now.
That... especially with the ones that don't actually end up being king, the ones that are supposed to, but then don't make it into the main line. That just throws everything off for you. Yeah.
So, Amin or Mimi, why don't you kick us off? Where do we begin with this tale?
I thought we'd kind of go through and just talk about what we highlighted, but there is one general theory I wanted to mention so we can keep in mind of that, or if you want to give a response to ahead. In terms of why did Maegor, why couldn't he ever had any kids? And I think it might have something either to do with his conception like magic was used in his conception or in keeping him alive.
He had some bad balls, man.
He had worms in his balls.
As an overall review for those of you who have not read Sons of the Dragon yet, although I'm sure everyone else has beaten us to it because it's been 20 days or so since it's been out. And it is a pretty easy read, but it is about the early lives and the reigns of the second and third Targaryen kings, which ends up being Aegon's two sons, Aenys and Maegor. And it kind of talks about, you know, the way that Maegor took over the throne, even though it, in tradition and according to Aegon's wishes, it would have been passed to Aenys. And then after Aenys, it would be his sons. And there's just no other way of getting around the pronunciation of Aenys in this. So.
Nope.
Okay, I thought his name was Aenys. And you guys are just throwing me right off. I'm like, wait a minute. Have I been saying it wrong this whole time?
No, we're going to be saying anus a whole lot this episode. We're going to be talking about a lot of anus.
That's a question. Do we say Viserys or Viserys?
Does it matter? I feel like we never got mad at each other for saying names.
Is sound.
I just talked over you that whole time. What'd you say, Mimi?
I said it's that YS sound, right? Like, yeah. Is that a like a E's or an is? Hmm. In here, but yeah, his name is really upsetting to me. So
Aenys became was the firstborn child, so he became king, and yeah. Shit went bad for him. And then Maegor, who was the strong one, ended up becoming king after Aenys died, and sort of ruled with an iron fist, and became Maegor the Cruel. And lots of battles, lots of ladies, lots of malformed children. And eventually he died. I mean, I'm giving an overarching story for those who haven't read it here. Eventually he died, and Aenys's son, Jaehaerys, ended up becoming king at some point. But it's basically the story of Maegor and Aenys.
Maegor was the first prince of Dragonstone. He got that title going. That was a nice origin of that.
Yeah, and he got that title because Visenya, his mom... the story goes that Visenya and Aegon didn't get along too well, so Visenya spent most of her time on Dragonstone to be apart from him, and so therefore Maegor, her child, spent most of his time on Dragonstone and became the prince of it.
So is it like it kind of reminded me this whole description at the beginning of, you know, when Aenys was born and Maegor, they're born to different mothers, but that Aenys was like, bah, he's just a sickly kid. Screamed for a fortnight when he was weaned. I cringed when I read that. And then you talk about Maegor, you know, who, as Amina pointed out, was born in sus conditions, like out of nowhere, even though Queen Visenya had not given birth in ages, right? Like, everyone thought that she was barren.
Mm.
Yeah, she knew it was a son, too.
The popular opinion was more she just wasn't sleeping with her husband. I think they just didn't get it on.
While she was there, he still slept with her. He just slept with his other wife more. Like, it was just this long period, and then suddenly she's like, I'm pregnant, and I will have a son, and then suddenly it's a son. I mean, she could just be
blocked. Well, the thing is, like, she only got pregnant after Rhaenys died, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and a long time later, like
I think it was, you know, she shunned her husband dead until it became clear that Rhaenys' kid might not be the ideal king.
Oh, why would she do that? She'd want a son, and Aegon did sleep with her. Why would she not try to avoid having a kid?
Like, I imagine Aegon slept with her. I imagine that she wouldn't have a choice in the matter, and that he wouldn't want.
Exactly like her.
No, he didn't. But I think World of Ice Fire, like, he would sleep with her like one night for every four for the other wife. But he still did. Like, and she wanted a kid. Like, I think she became desperate, maybe, and then turned to other methods at that point.
Oh. I got a different impression from it than you guys did. I kind of thought that maybe he, you know, went to her bedroom just for to face, you know,
Dannis like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. Maybe he became more desperate when he only had the one wife and tried more. But then she was even away more. I don't. Like, I mean, yeah, I think this is only a theory that maybe she turned to magic, but I think there's magic was involved in Magor's life somewhere, either in his conception or at least in that accident that happens later, which is actually kind of that accident, I think, is a reference to Henry VIII also had an accident when he was unconscious and apparently made him even worse of a person afterward. And I thought that maybe George was making a reference to that, although Magor was pretty bad even from the start.
Hmm. Yeah, he was. I had it's line of succession wise. It weirded me out. Like if you had asked me, Rhaenys had Aenys, but Rhaenys was the younger wife. I feel like the older wife's child should be first in line of succession, but she didn't have the child right away. She had the child 5 years later. But in my head, I was like, oh well, the older sister wife. Firstborn should be the rightful king, but that's not how they played it. So that kind of tweaked with my brain a little bit in this story.
I guess because they were married at the same time. If she was married to him first, then I would think that.
Yeah,
but I think
I was gonna think
time.
Like, where did your basis of judgment come for?
Kyle
sister
was being paid
wives
by Magor.
Well, I was just going with like. In line of succession stuff, it's always like the older, the older one or whatnot. So in my brain, I kind of put the term older onto the sister wives and not more important than the children of the sister wives. But
gotcha.
That is
you
not
got
the
that
case.
First wife stuff mixed up. What happens when you marry two sisters and also they're your sisters?
I've tweaked my brain a little bit.
So when you have your multi-marriage, Kyle, make sure you write it all down. Get a good pinup.
Yeah, my sister wives will be the same age, so it'll just be the child, the firstborn child.
It's all on the kid. Well, the whole thing with like Aenys and Magor having totally different dispositions too, like one of them being a shitty baby and then one of them being like healthy but like a crazy guy, kind of reminded me of, you know, the previous novellas that we had read about, you know, the black, maybe even just going back to this description of the Blackfyre pretenders. You know, when Daemon was described as, you know, being much more kingly in appearance and disposition and just being, like, better with a sword and how that made him so much more of an attractive candidate for king than his brother who was the rightful king.
Well, yeah, but it wasn't just that. It was also he seemed like a decent person, right? Or he had the ability, but he also had a likability to him, which Magor does not have.
No, he does not have. Yeah.
That was making me wonder if is this from a maester's point of view? Is this like a judgment thing? Like, we're going to say he was a better baby than the other one, you know, because it's my opinion. Or like at that point I was like, oh, is this like one of those, you know, they rewrite history later on to be like, oh, well, this king was always sickly and this one was always cruel. And maybe it wasn't quite like that.
Very likely.
But even the maester itself mentions that some of these stories may have been made up later. So you're right.
You know, as we were reading this, as I was reading through this, and as the telling of Magor's early life and then his reign was going down, I was like, oh, Magor sounds cruel. I bet that was Magor the Cruel. And that is what that was, but you know, it wasn't called that until later, right? So it kind of goes hand in hand with this idea that
I feel that
his actions kind of cast that shadow over his childhood and early life. So it was very easy to look back and write like, well, we always knew he was a bitch, you know, but then Aenys as well, because he had done such a weak job of managing the kingdom. I think it would be easy to look at him and be like, yeah, I heard that he wouldn't even give up on that titty. He was still just sucking on it at 7 years old, like Naren or something, you know, like I think it is easy to go back and kind of just say like, yeah, sure. We always knew he was going to be weak because he was a shitty baby, too.
Yeah, hindsight's 20/20. Yeah.
Magor is very Gregor-like here when he, like, chops off the stable boy's face. like that first incident. It was just like,
but you're going with that. Yeah, and what about when he chopped the guy's limbs off and made him go to his wedding?
Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like editorializing. Yeah. That seems like something he actually did.
Yeah, that sounds like something that happened. Oh, that was cruel. Hence the name. My gosh.
Well, I mean, that a lot of this is post the accident. But I mean, a lot of this before. Initially, I thought maybe a lot of this, he did get worse after the accident, but he was still bad before it.
So the accident, you mean when it was the 7 versus 7 and he got gravely injured?
He was unconscious for days, and then he's only brought back when they bring the Tain of the Tower shows up, and then the next day he wakes up.
Yes.
First of all, magically we brought him back, but also his personality has changed even worse at that point.
Still, I mean, just thing like when a palfrey kicked him and he stabbed the horse to death.
Yes.
And slashed off half the face of a stable boy. I mean, like that.
That's not normal behavior.
No, it was already horrible before. And I think why did he even have that fight? Right, like he had the 7-on-7. He still had enough like some sort of honor within him to do that. And then after the fight, he goes and like burns everybody anyway. Well, he should have just done that from the start if he's going to do it. I think that was a change in his personality, even worse at that point.
Hmm. He's also got this bloodlust, like warrior side to him. And I'm sure he was like, oh, you want to fight 7-on-7? Let's do this. He's like, I could just melt you all with my dragon, but
that's right.
I want to fight. Like, yeah.
But he's backed up by Dick Bean. To help him out.
Oh, Dick Bean. Hey, nobody would have backed him up if it weren't for Dick Bean.
Well, maybe nobody should have backed him up because this guy's a mess. So Aegon, during his reign, he kept the peace with the faith, right? The 7.
Yes.
Yes.
And that's an interesting thing that he was able to manage that particular accord all throughout his reign. And he was on good terms with the High Septons, but that he still had sister wives, you know?
I think was because he was already married to them when they conquered. I think the Septons probably were under the impression, okay, well, now that he's there, their next generations will adapt to our customs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he converted to the 7 once he conquered. So, like, now that he's part of the 7, no more marrying your sisters kind of deal. Right?
So they were basically like, you're an immigrant, Aegon. You must adapt to our ways when you came.
Yeah, there we go. Oh, yeah.
Well, and it seemed like it wasn't going to be a big deal because, right, he had no sisters. He had to marry to his – he had no daughters to marry to his sons.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So he married his cousin instead.
But he also Aegon gave a lot to the faith. Like, I didn't know it mentioned that the faith have their own courts and that kind of stuff. That might be new information. I don't remember hearing about that. So he balanced it very well with the faith, and then the faith warned him against having his son marry somebody too close. I think when they were going to have Maegor potentially marry one of his daughters, the faith warned him, and he accepted that.
Hmm. I'm just picturing the High Septon over there, like Saruman in his tower. He's just like, he's sending out all this, like, don't do this, we will stop you, blah, 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 blah. But, like, you never actually see the guy, he never leaves his home.
Well, the higher towers are also very important here, as they were in the Dance of the Dragons. Like, they were able to get Cerys Hightower married to Maegor.
Yep.
So, again, it shows the power of the high towers.
Everything seems pretty normal from the get-go. Like, you know, Aenys marries his cousin, I guess. You say they reckoned it cousin to cousin, but it seems distant enough to not be problematic.
One of the Valyrians, right?
The lady Alyssa from Valyrians.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, you know, they have a daughter, Rhaena. And at this point, Visenya betroths Rhaena to Maegor. Well, proposes it.
Oh, it's so creepy.
So creepy.
So creepy.
Would have solved so many problems, though.
Although, uncle and niece, not like aunt and nephew, hooking up all the time.
It all depends. It all comes down to the age thing. But, she's really trying to keep it in that family.
Yeah. They're trying to keep their tradition, but the faith aren't into that.
Yeah. No, I thought the tradition was maybe new to when they came to Dragonstone, and there wasn't a lot of Targaryens around. They're trying to keep the blood, but according to this, and also World of Ice and Fire, it was something done even back in Valyria. Like, I thought it was maybe, you know, after, like, there's only so few of them left, they wanted to keep the blood pure. But it kind of fits into the idea that just Dragon Rider Valyrians in general are something special, and they want to keep their blood limited. Like, they don't want to mix it.
Hmm.
Well, Maegor ends up marrying Ceres Hightower, which was a bride that the High Septon suggested, and Aegon, of course, because he had close ties with Old Town, saw wisdom in that choice. Maegor is 13 at this time when he marries his first wife, and boasts that he had consummated the marriage a dozen times that night.
Yeah. And she's 10 years older than him. And then again, this is like Henry VIII, because his first wife was older than him as well. But I think that's another parallel.
Who's a 13-year-old?
That must have been fun for her.
Well, if I was a teenager on my wedding night, I could have consummated that marriage 500 times too. You know,
so. Yeah, but each would have been very quick, though.
So. That's not that impressive. right here, you know, he starts talking about, like, yeah, I made a son, you know, at age 13. And joke's on you, Maegor, you'll never have a son.
Well, was that the first malformed child? Or did she not get pregnant in a row?
She didn't get pregnant.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Childless.
Sorry, I get all his wives mixed up a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, he had a lot, right?
Yes.
And as we go through it, I want to keep thinking about, like, why didn't he have kids? Was it his birth? Was it the accident? What? Because he hasn't had the accident yet, and yet he doesn't have any kids here.
This is just an episode of Amin being obsessed with Maegor's sperm count over here.
Yeah, jeez, he's just got bad balls, Amin. Some guys, you know, it's just unfortunate.
Just speaking from experience.
Whoa, my God, that's a little personal there, Amin.
There's a difference between bad balls and a low sperm count, and like all his babies came out to look like monsters.
Yeah, but that was like demonic magic, you know.
Yeah, well, were they poisoned later? Or if you say they were poisoned, well, the Taina wasn't around yet to do that, so I think it could all the way back to his birth. If you're saying he had bad balls, it was bad balls from birth.
Well, let's see here. So the Maegor has
bad balls. That's such a scientific term.
We're not naming this episode Maegor's bad balls, by the way.
It's cruel bar.
Oh boy. Okay.
And so it seems like for the last bit of Aegon's reign and the first part of Aenys's reign, then it seems like Maegor is a helpful dude, right?
Yeah, I was actually surprised when I was first reading. It's like, oh, they seem to actually get along-ish.
Yeah.
Get along-ish.
Yeah, there's a Sargo Saan. This is for the Saans. Is that a pirate family or a title that they take?
Oh, yeah, I saw that too. I was like, the Saan family. Salador. His great-great-grandson.
This was at the time that, you know, King's Landing was being fully built out, you know, with the Red Keep.
Yeah, Aenys started the development of the Red Keep. And then,
Aegon did, right?
Was it Aegon?
Well, Aegon had the Muddy Fort.
Like, yeah, he had Aegon Fort, which is the dumbest name I think I've ever heard of anything.
Well, he had said... he gave orders that it be torn down so a new castle may be raised in its place. And he did, you know, I guess begin maybe the process for design and construction.
Oh, okay.
And he died, and...
He died of a stroke, which I never knew about Aegon.
Which I thought was odd, too, that this maester in this George R. R. Martin's world would just be as matter-of-fact about it as like a... Yeah, it was a stroke when every other illness or medical problem has just been described in loony terms. But a stroke is actually recognized as such.
Stroke, there we go. Yeah, so he dies and Aenys takes the throne.
Aenys. He's got five kids at this time.
Does he already have five kids by now? Oh my god.
He's got five grandchildren, right? So let's hold on, let me just run through them in my mind right now. We had the daughter first, right, Raina?
Okay.
And a second child was, sorry, a son, right? Was
yep.
Aegon.
Mm-hmm.
And then a second son, Viserys, third child. And then Jaehaerys, fourth child.
Oh, Jaehaerys was his fourth child. I know. By the end of the story, I was like, Jaehaerys, I don't remember where he is in all this.
Because I knew that Jaehaerys is king. But now I'm starting to think about this fourth son of a fourth son thing that they referred to Dunk as.
Was Jaehaerys the fourth son, though? How many sons did they have before him? I guess they...
Oh, he was the fourth child.
Fourth child, okay.
Yeah. But still the fourth child.
Yeah. I was like, you know, thinking about how Dunk was unlikely because he was the fourth son of a fourth son, and I was like, wait, Jaehaerys was the fourth kid, so it's...
Aegon the unlikely? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he was a fourth son of a first son.
Or Dunk and Egg, sorry. Egg. My brain is, like, not working today. But, yeah, I was just
thinking... You sure didn't get punched yesterday?
I know, right? Maybe I got punched. I got all these names wrong. That's probably just the byproduct of everything.
You're unconscious, and now your personality's changed. You have a horse.
You were just really into Henry VIII.
Yeah. I learned a lot from watching The Tudors, so no.
You know, I was thinking about that because I am reading a book right now that is kind of takes place around that time, and I feel like any reference to like the War of the Roses or anything, or you know, the court intrigue of the Tudors, I think you're like, nah, they got that from George R. Martin. Yeah, you know, English history got that from George R. Martin.
Kyle's going to travel back in time, and then he's going to influence history.
Damn straight. How'd you know I was building a time machine? Dr. Doom and this shit over here.
That's right. Okay, so you know when Aenys took over, and then, you know, Maegor and Visenya are kind of like complaining about it and whatever, and it's just like, you're a little late to complain. If you're complaining, complain when you have this, like, who's going to claim the throne? Like, why let him take the throne and then undercut him?
Because the strong king isn't there anymore.
Why don't they just try to take the throne then? It's just like, you either should take the throne or accept it. But it seems just petty to not take it and then just keep trying to undercut him.
I suppose it's a matter of maybe he was, either he was not, that was not his particular ambition, and his mother had eventually talked him around to it or had an influence on him. But it also could just be a combination of that and just watching Aenys like mismanage the realm, right? And I suppose if you are Maegor, and this is the only time that I will cape for Maegor, and you are watching your older brother just fuck it up, right? And all of these rebellions rising, and you're like, ugh, every time I got to go out there, and I've got to go quash it, right? And he doesn't know what he's doing, and everyone's rebelling because he doesn't have the strength that's required to exert that loyalty or fear, right, in his subjects. But if you are Maegor and you have done the dirty work and you've got this lust of bloodshed now, just love murdering people, and your mom's always there going like, you know, you should, it's like you should be king though. I imagine that that's kind of where that's going to come about. But, you know, at the time that Aegon died, it seemed pretty clear cut. Like, here's the older son and he gets the crown, you know?
Yeah, I think there was quite a
age difference between them too. So I think, you know, he's always... He grew up knowing that he was not getting the throne.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. Aegon favored Aenys as well, and so he would have respected that. But then after Aenys died, then maybe he felt, okay, now it's my turn to take over. So I can see that.
Yeah, and then when Aenys... keep saying Aenys. That's just wrong. I mean, come on. But Aenys, didn't Aenys give Maegor Blackfyre? And stuff, and then the whole realm was like, "Look, even he knows."
He did give him, and then Visenya said that. I think, yeah,
yeah.
Well, yeah. Of course, Visenya would say that.
Yep. Of course, she would.
Trifling all the time. But here's the thing: I talk a lot of shit about Aenys's ruling, but I think, like, as I was reading this, I thought, like, yeah, nah, you know, his management style is like mine. So. I can identify with this. Of course you would give him Blackfyre. What were you going to do with it? You're just like a poet or something. So,
yeah,
you know, you're going to give the sword to the man, yeah, who's going to make the best use of it.
Yeah. But Aenys also had this idea that the two of them would, like, rule together. It was weird how he said that, because he's like, hey, let's rule together. And then in the same breath, he was like, just do everything I say. it was like, as long as you rule under me. And I was like, wait, that's not exactly what you just said.
He didn't quite say that, though. I think they were fine until the whole marriage issue came up later. But I just want to defend Aenys a bit here, maybe. I think, yeah, his mistake was how he responded to the rebellions. And he couldn't understand. He's like, well, I didn't do anything wrong to these guys. Why are they rebelling? Well, sometimes people just rebel. Sometimes people just want to take advantage of like what they can do.
Yeah, he expected people in Westeros to exert common sense. That was his first mistake.
Yeah.
He totally forgot that his father had come over and burnt all their families. They're not. Yeah, why are they mad at us? I don't understand.
And so, like I said, I know I was talking about how we mismanaged things, but I also do think that his lack of ruthlessness, you're right, does come from this place where, like, his father was the undisputed ruler, you know, and he wasn't there, right, to watch. Yeah. I mean, did he?
No, there was no real rebellion.
They didn't experience him dealing with things with, you know, fire-breathing dragons and, you know,
right. Handling so they it. They grew up ensconced in privilege, if you will, of the ruling class. And so I think that Aenys is kind of just, like, flabbergasted by the fact that people wouldn't just – his grasp, the Targaryen grasp on the kingdom – or any monarch's grasp on a kingdom is a tenuous one. And that it wasn't like he was by some divine right, destined to rule over these people, that he had to do it consistently with, you know, balancing a measure of force with, you know, enough kindness and peace in the realm.
Yeah, you needed a mix between him and Maegor. I think that's kind of the point made by the Maester as well, that they were too extreme on either end.
One's eating.
Kyle.
You can hear me eating?
Yes.
I rolled my chair away from the damn microphone, like half my room away. You still heard me?
Sounds like you're eating damn Doritos.
God damn it, I'm eating Pringles. I apologize. I'll put them away. I'm hungry. I haven't had breakfast. All right, fine. What were we talking about? Aenys and Maegor, they're like two different sides. It's like Aegon split and his personality split and went into each of his children. The cruel one, the strong one, and the friendly, nice guy.
Yeah. Aegon was the right mix of it then.
Yeah. Well, I was just really surprised, like, when Aenys and Maegor were getting along, like things were going all right, like as long like you kind of had the right mix because they were, you know, like assuming Aenys was listening to Maegor half the time until, you know, that he wasn't anymore.
They dealt with the rebellions.
Like, I expected it to be a very not pleasant sibling thing going on there, and it ended up not being that way. It wasn't until, you know, the marriage issue came up, like, that he just couldn't have kids, that he just, you know, couldn't, you know, snapped, I guess.
Then we have one of those references where they talk about, like, Dondarrion, his nose gets cut off, and then he, like, counters, and his son Davos is there, and there's, like, onions. It's like, come on. Like, there's just too much. It's one of the examples where it's not just the name, it's also the situation and the specific reference.
I did catch that.
No nose Davos?
So his father, I think, was that, and then his son was there with the rotting hands and feet that dangled in his tent like a string of onions.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I caught that. I was like, really, George?
Savage Sam. I think that was Savage Sam was already in World of Ice and Fire. But...
Oh, yeah, Savage Sam.
I didn't mind that one. It was the onions thing that I was just rolled my eyes
at. There's a couple of ones like that are just like Jane Westerling, and then she has a potion of fertility or whatever. It's like, really? Too much. Okay.
Well, so, I read this, like, this Queen Alyssa finally gives birth to yet another heir. This lady's just having babies left and right. A girl named Viola, who sadly died in the cradle not long after. Perhaps it was this continued proof of the queen's fertility that drove Prince Maegar to do what he did. Whatever the reason, the prince shocked the realm and the king both when he suddenly announced that Lady Cerise was barren and he had therefore taken a second wife and Elise Haraway. And I just thought, like, I wonder if Maegar had something to do with her death.
Hmm.
But it seemed like it was reactionary and sudden.
Yeah, I think
it was a daughter, so I don't think it was.
Yeah, it was just the birth, as it says, influenced him. He's finally snapped. He's like, I have no kids at all. And so he gets wed by blood and fire when there's no septon to officiate his new marriage.
I wonder how that is.
Mm.
Like the Valyrian, right?
Probably have just a big fire beside them or something, like a bonfire.
But yeah, so he has his second wife, which I think like everyone seems real shocked, but I thought that what, Aegon had two wives? Like, it doesn't seem like it would be shocking that he would take a second wife, especially if his first one didn't.
Yeah, I mean, what if he didn't take a wife and he just had a mistress? Were they going to be pissed off? Like, he could do that. He just hasn't the right to make her a formal wife.
Yeah, I just figured as his father had two wives, that seemed like that would be an accepted thing, you know. But maybe this was just kind of the first thing that they did because, you know, both of them married, obviously, not their sisters. And so Maegor was the first one to take a step back to that, you know, Targaryen tradition of like, nah, multiple wives and also relatives.
Well, once again, that's a thing like... It was okay before they came over and adopted a seven, but now that they've adopted the seven, they can't have multiple wives.
Well, they did have the seven on Dragonstone, but they weren't, like, in the direct influence of the... Like, this is something we often forget. The Targaryens had been in Dragonstone for, like, a century, and they had adopted really... They had done a lot of stuff from the mainland.
Oh, I did forget that.
Yeah. But they hadn't, on the other hand, they're on the island and they're not really getting involved, right? They can pretty much do whatever they want when they're on the island. But now that they're rulers of the mainland, they're more under the cultural sphere of the Old Town.
True.
Hmm. High Septon sounds like an asshole, though. It seems like he's just complaining about everything. Yeah,
that's right. But even Aegon was, you know, didn't want to... I mean, initially Aegon would have burned him when he first came there, and then Septon and the rest had submitted to him, but then Aegon didn't want to get involved in that again. Like, he was basically threatened not to have his heirs marry, like, the whole, like, too closely, and he followed that. Like, he knew when to fight and when not to.
Hmm.
But, you know, this High Septon is complaining that Aenys is not a good ruler, and he can't even control his brother, and I said, well, what you don't want is the alternative, his brother.
yeah
exactly. But his brother does get sent into exile,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of, didn't Daemon, or what was the guy, like the rogue prince, didn't he also get sent into exile kind of as well? Like, that's
seems just... like everyone just goes to Pentos and comes back to be
with a hot wife for a hot mistress
with a hot evil mistress, yeah. And evolved. Maybe there's some rite of passage there, but also I would think, like, man, Aenys is such a good guy. He tries so hard to make everyone happy that his solution to this was like, I will send you into exile for 5 years. Seems like he's sending a kid to time out, you know, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he himself makes the next blunder. Like, he does what even his father wouldn't do. And then he has like another incestuous marriage set up.
Yeah, no, this is the point where he lost me, is when he did that, and then it's like, okay, dude, at this point, go get your brother. Go get your brother. Like, the church is turning on you now. You have the exact same argument that your brother has going on. You guys are fighting the same, you know, you're allies in this, and you're a screw up. Go get your brother.
Yeah, I mean, so you're going to marry the kids to each other, alienate the faith, and then also give the title of Prince of Dragonstone to your heir. Well, your heir is already the Prince of the Realm.
Yeah.
I was banging my head against the walls.
Yeah, those were his two big blunders, I think. And then he starts losing. Then he doesn't know what to do with the rebellion all over the place. And then Visenya says, just let's go burn Old Town. Like, Old Town has almost burned several times in this story, which would have been horrible. Like, not only just the death of all those people, but like losing the Citadel and losing all the Maesters, like that would have really screwed Westeros over.
Yeah. And Old Town was the most populated city at that point, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That would have been awful.
But okay. Guy, so...
but Saruman's such an asshole.
He is. I just. But now I see it, Kyle, just him standing up there, ranting and raving, mad about everything.
He could rant and rave for a day and a night. Apparently, he could like preach for a day and night without food, and he was very healthy. Mm. We'll see what happens later.
We'll see what happens later.
So then Aenys dies, and Aegon is crowned.
Yeah. Do you think that he was murdered? I think not, because it seemed that he was actually improving initially, and then he died. I think she Visenya was actually trying to heal him.
Was she?
I don't know.
Yeah. Why have him like start to improve? I think like she probably hated him, but still, you know, had enough. Like she still cared for him as, you know, the son of her former husband, and so was trying to heal him, and then he just died because he heard the bad news, and he gave up.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, same. Seems like a lot of stress and pressure.
Yeah.
But at least he didn't have to live to see all that bullshit go down with the faith, you know? Mm-hmm. But anyway, so Prince Maegor returns.
You know what I liked about Maegor? The part that he kept saying... people were wondering when he was going to ride the dragon, or when he was going to pick a dragon, and he kept saying, no, there's only one. It's not ready yet, kind of thing. and then we find out later upon his return. Like, is it upon the return? Or no, it's...
No, he already had him. But you're right, it's a surprise. In the middle of the rebellion, he like one of the first rebellions, he just shows up.
That's right, when Aenys is still there. Yeah,
like that's when you first find him.
And he shows up, Maegor shows up on Beleriand the Black Dread. He took his father's... dragon, which is freaking scary. That dragon is massive.
And well, I was so Aegon isn't crowned automatically. I mean, obviously Aegon should be king, but this is when Maegor comes back and says, like, no, I'm king. And that seemed like kind of a clear-cut thing that was going to happen, as that Maegor would not have respect for the right of rule for his son, for his brother's kids, but more so like he's been out for 5 years. So, you know, isn't it par for the course that when someone comes back across the narrow sea on a dragon, they're trying to rule the realm? Like,
yes,
and then Dick Bean.
So let's talk, we got the Faith Militant here, right?
Yeah.
What am I calling him? Which was kind of cool. I enjoyed all this because there's all the talk of when Cersei restarts the Faith Militant and everything. And it's kind of like, oh, it's a wrong choice. You shouldn't do that. It's like, okay, well, what's the history of these guys? And I really enjoyed seeing that they were really these very, very powerful knights for the faith. And they were revered and thought to be excellent fighters and everything. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And there were hundreds of them, right?
Yeah,
I enjoyed seeing how powerful they were.
Yeah, and they weren't just they weren't just like that. They were sons of noblemen that were like that warriors branch, but then they also the poor people were also fighting. So they were like united, like across all the classes. They were fighting together.
Yeah,
and that's why they were so dangerous.
And the poor people, what were they called? They were called the poor fellows.
Poor fellows.
Yeah,
and the higher ones were called the. Warrior sons. That's right.
Yeah. Then you have the 7-on-7 fight. It's pretty awesome.
So wait. Remind me why they did the 7-on-7 there again.
Well, I mean, see, that's the thing. Like, Maegor was still in a semi-negotiating mood. You know, he could have just come in and tried to burn them out, but he comes in. And they kind of like have a they treat with each other, and they say swords will decide the matter, and they agree.
Yep.
To have this thing, and then Maegor didn't have the Kingsguard with him, right? I think he had to rely on, just some people who would join him for that.
Yeah, he just kind of asked the crowd. He's just like, who's going to help me? And nobody was going, and everybody was like, not me, you know, fingers on their nose. And then Dick Bean steps up, just some like whatever dude. I don't even remember who he was. He was like a nobody.
Yeah. He's not a knight. He's just a man at arms.
Yeah, this is a very Duncan Egg moment, you know.
except unlike Duncan Egg, Dick Bean gets cut down like in 1 second.
Oh yeah, he just died. He was the first to die. But he did his job, man. He got some warriors for Maegor and. Yeah. And then it came down to Maegor versus two of the warrior sons who were gravely injured. And so it was a 2-on-1 fight. And Maegor ended up winning, but he took a pretty bad blow to the head. And they thought he was dead, too. But he was still alive. And so the warrior sons kind of like all retreated. And they're like, oh, well, he won the battle. He's still alive. And what should we do now? And the gods obviously wanted him to win the battle because that's the weird shit they believe.
Whenever he talks about the names of the knights who offered their swords, or like these, the names of the four Maegor chose are writ large in the history of Westeros. And I thought, I have never heard any of those names. Bram of Black Hole, Rayford Rosby, Guy Lawson, Lucifer Massey, Lord of Stone Dance. What the fuck is Stone Dance? And I thought,
Sounds awesome. Shit.
Imagine having been on the wrong side of history. Imagine giving your life for Maegor the Cruel. Like,
you're like, whoops.
One cool thing about reading some of this history, is kind of getting this feel for all the different lords and lands and titles and castles and stuff that existed on the wrong side of history, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like understanding who the big houses were during the Targaryen reign, and then, you know, how that clashes with our understanding of who the primary players are now, so many years later, you know? You're able to see, like, no, I guess these dudes did get wiped out, or their houses were absorbed, or their line died off, you know? And a lot of that has to do with supporting the wrong bid, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And a lot of their like homes get burned out later in the story, that they go, they burn out by dragons. Like all these names that we don't recognize, that was it. They were killed off.
Right. And not even the wrong bid, but like the one that didn't endure.
Yeah. Okay, well, so Maegor is unconscious for days, 27 days, and then just Tyanna of the Tower comes and gets him awake in one day.
All of this just feels like echoes of things that we've seen before, you know? I'm all like, oh, okay, bringing in that old mirror swamp, Petoshi swamp.
Yeah, that's right. Magical woman from the east. This trope is over and over again, all the way to Melisandre. No, it's intentional. Like, it's so that's a view of Westeros and then she's seen as a witch and all that stuff. Like, George has played that properly. See, that's the difference between just like having pointless references and inside jokes. We're actually showing that this is a repeating meme of the way Westeros views the east. Like, that's good writing, I think.
So. Yeah, particularly women from the east.
Yes. They're
very much always seen as seductresses and
sorcerers and sorceresses. Yeah.
I'm going to take a trip over to Pentosh.
Yeah, it seems a place to go. You can come back with a new beauty and a man in arms with you. So.
And some black magic. Crazy.
So he wakes up and he just burns everyone. And
he burns everyone.
The cream of the crop, right? Like, some of the best warriors in the Warrior Sons. They're gone now.
Yeah. So you say he gets crazier after he wakes up, you think?
Yeah, I think so. Not that he wasn't already bad before. It wasn't like he had a complete switch. He just becomes even worse, I think.
Okay.
Cool. Okay, well, then there's Bitterbridge. We get the name of Bitterbridge from one of these battles. Mm. So that's in the story.
That's because the force was divided amongst the north and the south bank, right? And they just got destroyed. Was that Bitterbridge?
Yeah. Yeah. That's right, yeah. Okay. So Maegor marries Tyanna of the Tower. So he has three wives now.
I was going to say, which wife number is that?
And he just, this is the common thing. Like, Maegor just basically kills people until he finds somebody who does what he wants. He kills like all these septons in a row, and he's like, okay.
Who's going to marry me? Nope. Kill. Who's going to marry me? Nope. Kill. Who's going to marry me? Yeah, I'll do it. Okay, good.
Yeah.
But at this point, with Tyana, they say she speaks with rats and spiders, so this is kind of the first blueprint of the Master of Whispers, right? She is the first Master of Whispers in King's Landing.
Yeah. And then she's also sleeping with Maegor and Alice. Yeah, they're all like...
Yeah, George just couldn't resist the temptation to throw in a threesome in here to make this freaky.
High five, George.
Do you guys think that was true or just a story that was put in by Maesters?
Seems true to me.
Oh, really? I kind of go with it. Seems like...
But made up?
Yeah, they're just making it creepier.
I don't know that necessarily. They say that, you know, that the two women would be lovers, but then also when they talk about how Alice later was tortured, finally, you know, by Tyana, I would think, like, were they lovers or was there always, like, animosity between them because they were two women sharing a man, you know?
Well, that's again, as we move forward, like, did she poison or not? Like, was she actually poisoning these babies?
Well, she said she did, right?
Yeah, but on the other hand, she was about to be tortured. Like, I don't trust anything that comes from torture or somebody about to be tortured. Like,
yeah.
I don't know why she'd want to make the torture worse for herself.
Maybe she thought she'd just be killed right off the bat, but that didn't happen.
Well, I guess she did, so.
Oh, yeah, right. She in the end was just killed. Yeah, you're right. Okay, so Matt... Master of Whispers, moving on here, let's see.
Who killed the High Septon, y'all?
I think it was the other Septons.
Oh, really?
That's interesting.
I think it was either the High Towers or the Maesters. I think the Maesters in particular didn't want to die for nothing. They didn't care. They just wanted to keep doing their studies.
So for those who haven't read it, was the king there? Was Maegor there?
They're heading that way. Like they were going to burn Old Town.
So
like
Maegor was there. So they were heading down to Old Town. They were going to take it out.
Yeah.
And the forces in Old Town were there. And the High Septon, like the next morning, Maegor's forces arrive at Old Town. And instead of Old Town being like all locked up, ready for battle, it had Targaryen banners and the gates open and nobody there. And they were like, what happened? And the High Septon had died overnight. And apparently, like his arms were slashed from wrist to elbow. There was a sword like through the back of his neck. I'm getting my death mixed up.
That's right.
He had just died overnight, and they were like guards or whatnot. Nobody knows who killed him. Mm-hmm. They rightfully were like, oh shit, let's not all die. and let's go for the Targaryens. So yeah, there's this mystery of how he died up there.
Yeah. So you think, but of course everyone always thinks like sorcery, you know?
Yeah.
But I just think like Ashley said, I mean, it was probably just a smart thing to do for the other Septons.
Do you think he did it himself?
Or the Archmaesters of the Citadel?
No, he was too believing to do it himself, I think. I think that was the problem. They couldn't have him. He wouldn't surrender, and then Maegor probably wouldn't take a surrender for him. They had to get rid of him. So,
unless he did kill himself, and then they did take that surrender.
I feel like his death people wanted to surrender, and then they killed him, is the order, I think.
Interesting. Yeah, because they do mention in the book, like, maybe he killed himself to save all his people, because they knew he was going to...
Yeah, well, oh, but he was too.
I'm getting my deaths mixed up again. Aren't
No, they do say that. I mean, that's one of the theories.
That maybe is a theory,
that he was too scared.
I'm
or
getting
he
my
himself.
High Septon
but,
and my Maegor.
No, but I don't believe it. I think the guy was such a fanatic.
Yeah, that's an easy mistake to make, Kyle. They're so similar.
Well, they end up in a. They both end up like cornered in a way.
Yeah, but on losing sides. Yeah, absolutely.
But I think he was just too much of a fanatic. I thought he was going to win somehow. Like he's going to. Magically shoot the bolt at the dragon's eye or something. I don't know. Like I think he was a fanatic and he was taken out. But Maegor comes in and then he has all these trials. Like he was there longer than I thought. Like half a year just sitting in Old Town and like killing people. I didn't know about that.
And killing people.
Pretty much.
He killed everybody but one. One of the High Towers, right?
Yeah, High Towers again. Like they were able to use their influence to.
Yep.
Okay. Then he reconciles with his first wife.
Well, except to Pater, I also really like that description of him. Just this guy's old as shit. Forgotten the words of the book.
Yeah.
I keep thinking of that guy in The Princess Bride who was doing the wedding.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's probably that guy.
Mowage.
Okay, so let's move on, given the time. Aegon is rising here, and initially I thought, Mickey, maybe this is when Maegor loses, but no. Like, Maegor, again, is effective here, because all Aegon needed was one victory, and then everyone would have gone on his side. And Maegor prevents that.
Yep. Yeah, it seems like it was just, you know, you see Aegon sweeping in on his dragon, and he's like a child. So this is the first time that, since the Doom of Valyria, that two dragons have fought in the sky, but it doesn't really seem like as much of a fight as I think Valerion just eats Quicksilver. And yeah. I just pictured it like Quicksilver just rides, just Valerion just opens his mouth and...
Well, there's a picture in World of Ice and Fire, as Kyle found on page 157 for people that have World of Ice and Fire, where it shows that fight. And yeah, it's one-sided, definitely.
Yeah, he rips off his wing and then, you know, peace out, Quicksilver. Not much of a fight there.
I felt really bad for the dragon.
Oh, wow.
Didn't feel so bad for Aegon, but, you know.
Poor Aegon. But at this point, Alyssa is smart and, you know, decides to rally her kids. I don't know if that is right after that or...
Well, she kind of goes, they go into hiding at this point, right? I think Maegor becomes,
so.
Yeah, Maegor goes back, and then he gets,
Prince Viserys. Viserys.
Yeah, mm-hmm. As a squire, but also as a kind of a
hostage.
Hostage, yes, for sure, but also even a temporary heir, because he needs somebody to be an heir until he gets one, right? He has, what if he dies? Like, he has nobody to...
Right, well, then for a moment, it seems like he might actually have a child, right? Alice is pregnant.
Yeah.
And during.
She gives birth to a. Well, she has like a miscarriage or stillbirth, and there's a monster baby.
So many monster babies.
This cannot be my son, he roars, and then he gets furious and kills all these people.
Never kills everybody in the room.
Yeah.
Other than and Alice's sister.
Then he plays basketball with the Grand Septon's, or no, Grand Maester's head, basically. Oh, he's like.
Jesus.
Sitting there with.
Do you think this is true? What Tyana finds out that Alice Haraway was taking every, just fucking anybody and everyone, just hoping to give Maegor a son? Because while
I don't think the child would have been deformed then if it wasn't his.
Right, if it wasn't his.
Well, unless spider whisperer really was poisoning, like,
yeah.
Dark magic.
It's just it's really difficult for me to figure out which one it like. I don't know, I mean, that's George for you, but it's so complicated. It's like, was Tyana also poisoning at the same time?
Yeah, I don't really know. I kind of felt like she was banging all those dudes, or at least some of them.
Most of them, they tortured them, and then two of them, all but two, confess, and then they kill all 20, even the ones that don't confess. Like, what the hell? Like, even the ones that didn't confess to, they still kill them off.
Yeah,
and I just don't think it's true.
Yeah, I feel like the ones that didn't confess are basically confirming that the list was not real. Like, you're going to confess under torture. So
That's right. And most people that confess, and it means nothing, because torture just forces people to, you know, say anything to get out of torture. But even that two did not, like,
yeah,
they...
I think that's telling.
Yeah. I just don't think so, because I feel like, you know, you are married to a man like Maegor. The last thing you're going to do is fuck around on him with...
Yeah, but also, aren't you afraid of not giving him the son, and then he'll?
I mean, those other bitches didn't give him either.
Yeah, he never killed the other wife. They just, Therese, you just get put aside. But at least you're still alive. Like, you're not tortured to death.
But, fucked away. So he fucks those people up.
But it is another King Henry reference too, isn't that? It was like, wasn't that what the?
Yes, that's right. One
Anne Boleyn was accused of.
Yeah, and another one of his wives as well. I think this whole kind of. Unfaithfulness to the king. Yeah, that's right. There you go. And then they have like the horrible torture of her too, right? It's like she takes a a fortnight to die.
Yeah, we don't speak of that, I think it says. Details of that are best left unknown.
All right, moving on. More bad stuff about Harrenhal in general. And also Harrenhal gets diminished. I think this is key. Like, they used to have more land supporting it, and now it's a smaller, like, it covers a smaller area.
Yeah.
I'm starting to believe that whole Harrenhal being cursed, you know, hearing the more of the history of that place.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But during this confusion, Queen Alyssa, well, Visenya dies, and as Alyssa takes advantage of this opportunity while Magor's mourning his mama to escape from Dragonstone with Dark Sister stolen, actually. And of course, I think, like, oh man, fucked up of you to try that, Alyssa, knowing that your son is hostage. And as a result, Viserys is tortured for 9 days.
I'm wondering if she realized it would be that bad, like if that, you know, he would actually kill his nephew.
I feel like she did. Thought. I think she was like, well, sacrificing a son to help everybody else.
Well, it's the first, I think it's probably the first time a Targaryen has been tortured. I mean, he killed another Targaryen in battle, that's one thing, but to torture a captive to death, a Targaryen prince. It's crazy, and then he did it. And even like the Kingsguard are basically saying, like, oh, he probably doesn't know. Like, they don't want to do it. And then everyone, this is one of the things that turns people against Maegor. It's like everyone's sad because of that death.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then in the meanwhile, the Maegor kills everybody who was building the Red Keep.
Oh, yeah. We get that story, which we know. We've heard that so many times that Maegor killed everyone who knew about it. I didn't know that he feasted them and gave them lots of good stuff before he killed them all. But
fucked up, if true.
Yeah, and then I really liked afterwards where he was like, and then he decided to build the dragon pit, and he had a hard time finding people to build it.
Yeah, no one wanted to come to work.
Yeah, he had to get prisoners to build the dragon pit, which I didn't know. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. But here we go, there's a bad legacy of Maegor. The dragon pit ultimately screws over the Targaryens.
Yep, makes them all small and beep.
So he wasn't just a monster. He was also not that bright either. He didn't make good decisions, you know, even though he was able to put down a lot of rebellions and assert, you know, he didn't make strategically better decisions than his brother when it came down to it.
Yeah.
And so, of course, you know, with Alyse died, I mean, tortured to death, a horrible story. And Cerise Hightower dies of a sudden illness. And Tiana is his only queen left, right? So,
yeah.
At this time, I assumed he was going to take another wife.
Yeah, and he goes overkill. He's just like, I must have an heir. So he basically just marries a bunch of women to do that.
And so, yeah, everyone has a different idea, and he decides that he's going to listen to all of those ideas and marry a whole score of women. So at this point, Maegor's had like six wives or something by the end of his life, right?
Jesus. Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, the three initial ones, and then he has three here, I think, right? So, yeah, six.
Dude has had more marriages than I've had relationships. That is.
Well, he's old-fashioned. He has to marry them before he sleeps with them.
I wonder if that's another King Henry reference. Maybe George is just going all out on the King Henry thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe he's just, like, lost inspiration.
No, I think it's. I mean, he's already... Aegon the Unworthy is also a King Henry reference. I think he pulls references and uses them for different characters, so...
Like, but, you know, his war with the Faith Militant, I thought, was...
Yeah, that's also, again... King Henry's like, right? Well, Maegor didn't try to have his own religion.
That's the beauty. Might as well have at this point.
Yeah,
considering how into fighting with the faith he is. Should have
brought some Merlot priests over or something and tried to convert.
So Rhaena tries to hide herself, hide her twin daughters. Doesn't work.
dyes their hair, changes their name, yeah, kind of like another Aegon.
Oh, I thought those purple eyes would just blend in with everybody.
Mm. You know, I thought it would. That would have worked, and that would have been the first seeds of like all the hidden Targaryens. But Tyanna finds them, of course, and Rhaena here then is able to is forced to marry her uncle.
Mm.
And the other queens are Lady Jane of House Westerling, and
yeah, then there's all the different Eleanor stories.
House Costain.
She scratches back to bloody ribbons, like
all the wedding night shenanigans. Yeah,
yeah. Jane Westerling drinking the fertility potion and all the.
There's like sex and violence and attempted murder and.
The black brides, right? All widows. Yeah.
Who knows what actually happened? Yeah.
So the daughters are not, you know, murdered. Arya and Rhaella are surprisingly, I kind of thought they would be, but
they are split up. One becomes a Septa, and the other one. What happened to the other one?
Just kept her, I guess.
They kept
as a lawful heir,
as a hostage, yeah.
Okay. Which would have disinherited Jaehaerys. If she was considered the lawful heir. But at this point, one of the wives, Jane, of course, ends up pregnant. And then Queen Eleanor ends up pregnant almost immediately. So Maegor is thrilled, but as proven by Amin's insistence and also the title of this episode, Maegor's bad balls hold true, and they have monsters.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. It said his privy parts are poison, his seed full of worms. Gods would never grant him a living son.
And they are, yeah, they are dead monsters. They are not living monsters.
Yeah, legless, armless, male and female genitals. Eleanor has one with no eyes and rudimentary wings.
Yeah. They're a bunch of time traveling fetuses.
It's very reminiscent of the child that Daenerys and Drogon. Drogo,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. This kind of whenever Targaryen babies go bad, they're kind of like this kind of mutilated and even dragon-like creature. Yeah.
Are they banging dragons at one point? Like, how did this happen?
I don't know. There's something up with their blood. Yeah. There's something. Then Maegor, you know, sees this queen Tyanna, and they're about to torture, and she says, "Oh, I've been poisoning all these babies, apparently."
So Maegor takes her out.
Yeah, but why? So why would she do that? Like, did she so wanted her to have her own heir? But she never became pregnant herself, so it's like, why risk
it? No, and it just said it. That is a question. Tyanna the Tower had her revenge. What was she revenging? You know, like what was the revenge? And then it makes you wonder.
She just didn't want him to marry other women, and you know.
But he was already married when he had her.
Yeah, the previous
he had two wives.
It just made no sense for her to. Even before, like, to be poisoning all these kids. I think, yeah, it's something wrong with Maegor and not her.
No, you say that, but then I also wonder, like, you know, what did he do to her in Pentos? Like, she came over. He sent for a ship to bring over Alice and Tyanna, but, like...
Well, she came over and she basically, like, I mean, what did she... Was he dying and he brought him back to life? Did she save him with magic? Something happened and it made his balls bad at that point? When he's brought back, so it was
I don't know. I don't know
it's
that
part of the cost to be alive. Maybe that you get, you know, worms in your balls. Like that's like part of the exchange.
Being raised again. I don't know if that was part of it, but also wonder like if she has been just working on a long game for revenge. You know.
Well, not. You mean like that she was brought against her will or something, or she was disappointed to be brought over? Something happened?
No, I don't know. I don't know what the circumstances were with how they got together or anything, but, you know, just that line that even in death she had her revenge, and I thought like...
Well, at that point, I think it was she was killed and that was her revenge, or the baby was... Because she did predict that the next baby was going to be also like having problems, but she could have maybe just known that it was having problems.
Yeah, I guess I just wouldn't know why she would be poisoning them.
Yeah. Like I don't trust her confession anyway. Like if you're about to be tortured, maybe she just said it and then she hoped that she'd be killed quickly in rage, and that's what happened. She had a quick death in rage, rather than be tortured to say something. Even if it wasn't true, you probably convinced to it. confess to it eventually. That's the uselessness of torture.
Yeah, that is possible. But at this point, Maegor has killed anyone and everyone, and no heirs.
Yeah. Everyone's turning against him. They're starting to leave now. And then we hear what happened. Like, Jaehaerys shows up and calls all the banners, and he has two dragons to one at the moment.
Rhaena leaves, mounts her dragon, and abandons Maegor, taking her daughter, the one that was still at court, and Blackfyre, which I thought, good move. I'm all about these Targaryen women stealing off into the middle of the night on their dragons, but like, also
stealing swords at the same
time. Just yanking that Valyrian steel before they leave.
Then here, Maegor's, he's not quick to respond. Like, he's compared to his past, reactions to rebellion. So he's not sure what to do. And he orders the death of the other daughter, but they don't do that.
Yeah, but at this point, there is no loyalty to him anywhere, except for maybe a small, like a handful of lords who we never hear about ever again.
Yeah, no great lords are with him.
And so Maegor brings them together in the Red Keep to discuss his plan of battle, which is suicidal, right? Because he's got just a tiny squad, 4,000 men among them all. Only 1 in 10 of those are knights.
Yeah.
Lord Hayford suggests that maybe, hey, you should abdicate and take the Black, and is beheaded on the spot. Maegor really knows how to
inspire loyalty
in the three men he has left to him, or whatever.
Yeah. That was part of what Tywin Lannister had said. Is if you always, I mean, not this situation, if you always just kill anyone who surrenders to you, well, then why even surrender? Mm-hmm. You might as well fight it out. Like, you have to sometimes forgive people that surrender. And yeah, I mean, he did do that at times, but the thing is, even at this point, okay, he's lost everything. He still has Beleriand. It's like, he still has a nuke. Like, he still could make a fight out of it, and then he dies. Why? Like, did someone kill him? Like the High Septon to just end the war, or did he kill himself? Like, what happened? Because he still has him.
The Iron Throne took him out.
Well, people say that, right? That he was, arms had been slashed open from wrist to elbow. Another blade had gone up through his neck to emerge beneath his chin. So, you know, a lot of theories, just like the High Septon thing. But what really kind of struck me was the Red Keep has its secrets through some secret passage. And wouldn't that be the irony of it, that Maegor would spend all of his time building all these secret passageways and stuff? And then that is really what contributes to someone's access to kill him, you know?
I think it was a member of the Kingsguard. I kind of like that parallel. That might be someone else that was like Jaime and just like saw that.
They were smart enough to get out of there so they don't get blamed for it. They do. Because even if he killed himself, like, okay, slitting his wrist is one thing, but he has like a thing through his neck. Like, did he really just jam his neck into like...
God, that is the most metal thing I've ever heard.
Like, that's, I think he was killed. I think he was pushed onto that thing. And because that's the one thing you can do. He still has Beleriand, but if you kill him before he is able to mobilize, well, then that's it.
Beleriand must be a million years old and tired at this
point. Oh, Beleriand is incredibly dangerous at this point. He's still, even two versus one,
he would have. Bigger.
Yeah. Like, he still had that. That was the one thing he had. So I don't think he would have given up. I think he would have fought it out, but I think he was killed.
So he dies here. His reign lasted 6 years and 66 days. I get it, George. Very cute. And he dies childless, left no heir. And so, of course, at this point, Prince Viserys is dead. Prince Aegon is dead. And Jaehaerys is the only male heir remaining, right?
Yeah.
So Rhaerys and Alicent come over. Alicent is the youngest daughter at this point. And when I saw her name, I thought this was good Queen Alicent, right?
Yeah, I think it is, right? They married a long time. So it is, yeah. Yeah. And I think the key difference here is when Aegon was still fighting his fight, he wasn't on good terms with the Faith. Like, the younger Aegon, they didn't pair up. But at this point, everyone's united against Maegor. So he has the Faith on his side here. Even though he has
They took out that Septon.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. Yeah, maybe they were able to be more flexible, but now everyone's united and he has a great reign. That's the end of the story, basically. Yeah. That's another story.
So, but it is odd because I'm like, wasn't Jaehaerys married to his little sister?
Yeah.
It seems like this would have just been another thing, right? For
well, here to fill I think some that type the key was that they spent time winning over the great lords. Like his mother married Baratheon eventually, and he's like, and so they got enough great lords. The faith was probably like, okay, do we really want to fight this one out again with the great lords as well? Like, I think that's the difference, that Jaehaerys really got the great lords on his side. He spent that time.
Well, they'd also taken out all the warrior's sons and all that by then.
That's right. They had less of a force on their side, too.
Well, I think that about wraps it up.
Yeah. Awesome.
Did you get any questions on your Twitter, I mean?
Very quickly, let's see. Okay. So Westeros Indonesia says, why did Tyanna poison the wombs? What's her motivation? Like, wasn't she... Was she secretly in league with Alyssa? That's the idea. Like, she's on the other side.
Oh, no, wait. But didn't she torture Alyssa?
Oh, no. I think Alyssa, the one... No, not Alice. Alyssa, the one that's... Was she on the side with the other Targaryens? Maybe that's why she did that.
So that Maegor wouldn't have an heir, so that would have to be one of Alyssa's.
Why would she come in and save Maegor in the first place, then?
Yeah, I don't get it. I think her motivations are still hard to tell at this moment. Like, it's difficult to judge her.
Spurned lover.
Yeah.
Spurned Pentoshi lover.
Eventually he does stop sleeping with her, but again, that's late. Like, apparently she's been doing this for a long time. Okay, another question from Daniel. Was Maegor resurrected by dark magic or the kiss of R'hllor? Dark magic, I think, in general, right? I was thinking
dark magic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then finally, did Maegor become a zombie after the trial of Seven? Or, like, again, the similar. I don't know if he was dead fully, but I think there was a cost to saving him.
Okay, and you think he came back with a little less life, like Dondarrion style? So that
Maybe.
That would lean something more towards the kiss of R'hllor.
Yeah, but then again, the final question is, was there magic used to initially conceive him? So other people had that idea as well. Like, was he, even his conception, brought as a cost of magic? Or could it just be just incest that screwed him over? That's why he had bad balls.
Bad balls. So Duncan on Facebook asks if it undermines, do you guys think it undermines the main series theme of disputed histories to be given official accounts?
Who says this is an official account?
They say, you know, a lot of that going on in it, you know.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I again, this goes pretty far back, right? So it's not even as recent as the Rogue Prince era of things. So we think that I don't know how much dispute is there about this piece of Targaryen history. I get that with the stuff in the Dance of Dragons that, you know, having an official account does put an end to some theories that we've had. But again, like Amin pointed and Ashley pointed out, it's all hedged in like one maester's take, you know?
Yeah.
Or...
I guess that kind of goes with his second question as well. If it, do you feel it negates readers' efforts to piece together the past or tease out the answers to mysteries when Martin just provides these massive info dumps rather than organically weaving them into the story?
Yeah, no. I don't take it as an info dump. I think it's still very subjective.
Yeah, how much is he supposed to? How much world building do they want in the main book? They're going to complain. He's like, why is he talking about things that happened 200 years ago? Like, I think it's better.
That definitely happened in the last book when everybody was like, who cares about Tyrion going down this river and learning about this unknown land? Whatever, we don't care about this.
Yeah,
I think it's kind of cool, but I've always seen it like all of it as, you know, the history of Westeros, and Westeros at present is just all like a big, big jigsaw puzzle, you know? And whenever he does one of these novellas, it does kind of put together a chunk, like at the very corner, at the very beginning, you know? But then it also kind of scatters some pieces here and there that makes it easier for you to formulate new theories, you know, for things that we might not have even thought about or had any basis for understanding. And so I think, like, while it might be, you know, completing a part of the puzzle piece here, we don't know whether or not that this is actually, I mean, you know, George reserves the right at any point to go back and revise anything that he's written and just point the finger at, like, I don't know, that old maester didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
But also, you know, the light it sheds on other things, I think, is actually really cool. So I'm glad for these novellas.
Yeah, same here.
Really final quick point. I know we went over time, but you just, as you mentioned, George rewriting stuff. There is actually a theory that is dead now, is the narrow hips. That is 100% dead because the latest edition of Feast for Crows has been changed. The text has actually been changed. Like, I don't know why George would do that to change the text.
Like, I think he said that it was actually an actual mistake. And
yeah.
I guess they were
said
just
that. But they actually changed
it. With it. Yeah.
They actually went back and changed it. So
well,
the
good, because he was probably getting hundreds of messages every single damn day talking about it. And he's like, Jesus Christ.
Oh, that's part of the fun of a lot of these theories. But I'm just surprised that they went and they changed like that. And they actually changed. It wasn't. They changed the text in Feast for Crows. So that theory is dead. The narrow hips is being formally changed.
Narrow hips are killed. Narrow hips are out. Wide hips are in. You've read it here first. Well.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Well, that was great. That was fun to do this, you know, reunite for this.
It's good having the gang back.
All right. Well, thank you for sending in some listener questions. And as usual, feel free to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, leave us some comments, tell us what you thought of this novella and what you think of my cool voice. And hopefully we'll get together sooner rather than later and continue in our reread efforts. I imagine we are still on Storm of Swords.
You imagine. Yes, you are. That's correct.
But we almost have the art book done. There's like two chapters left.
We've been saying that
for 2 years. I know. We're just trying to. Yeah. Well, I think we're trying to give your chapters away, but it's just still, again, it's hard to get them done. So.
Nobody wants them.
Awesome. No more TV. Yeah.
Well, I gotta head out, guys. It's been great chatting with you.
Yeah.
Take care, folks. See you next time.
All right. Have a good night.
See you next time.